Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we join Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin for the second part of our weekly Q&A with Layla. Hi, Layla. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Great. How are you
Good.
Doing?
Great. Oh, by the way, let's mention to our listeners the way to get questions to us is via radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com, and state your question, make it succinct, and try to make it of general interest to our listeners, and we'll field it, do our best to answer your question. All right.
So, okay. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
This question comes from Kathy. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, thank you so much for dedicating your time for our health. Kathy, you're very welcome. I am a 47-year-old female. I've had chronic migraine headaches since 6 years ago. For the last few years, I've lived on painkillers. Recently, I read Dr. John Lee's book and listened to your podcast. I also read your article regarding estrogen dominance syndrome, and I've started to use some natural treatments. Could you tell me what supplements, besides milk thistle, I should take to improve my liver health so that I can enjoy red wine without migraine?
Oh, boy. Yeah, that may be tough.
You may have to give up the red wine,
yeah,
Kathy.
let's talk just a little bit about why red wine causes migraines.
Tyramine.
Yeah, right. It contains bioactive substances that affect the arteries.
Yeah.
And also, it really generates a lot of histamine production in people.
Yes.
It can cause a lot of flushing and just triggers mucus production and may trigger migraines, headaches. So,
yeah.
Okay. So, is it worse in women because of estrogen? The answer is yes, because high levels of estrogen make it harder for the body to get rid of alcohol. And that's why women generally have less of a tolerance for alcohol than men, because their livers have to detoxify lots of estrogen at the same time that they detoxify the alcohol.
And they don't make enough alcohol dehydrogenase to help to detoxify
break it down.
All of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it becomes a little bit of a vicious cycle, because women who drink regularly will increase their estrogen. So more of a burden on the liver to detoxify both of those things.
In fact, that's demonstrated by the fact that women who even drink a couple of drinks a week, 2 to 3 drinks mm-hmm. a week, have a higher risk of breast cancer because they maintain higher levels of estrogen. Okay, so estrogen dominance. Estrogen dominance is a situation that's really prevalent, which is excess estrogen, which causes a lot of symptoms. It causes bloating. It causes emotionality. It causes PMS. It will cause breast tenderness. It'll cause heavy periods. It will. What are some of the other things?
That's plenty.
Yeah, you know, flushing, you know, uncomfortable symptoms.
And, you know, as we get into our 40s, and Kathy is a 47-year-old female, she's obviously in perimenopause.
Yes, it gets worse.
Because progesterone is now waxing and waning.
Yep.
She's probably ovulating less.
Right.
So then there appears that estrogen dominance. It's
exactly.
Because of the lack of progesterone.
So there's two aspects. One is you may be making too much estrogen.
Yeah.
The other is you may not have adequate progesterone, because it's relative to your progesterone. They need to be in balance. And so the trouble is there's a perfect storm as women near menopause, because they tend to have surges of estrogen. They also tend to get heavier. And the heavier you are, each of your fat cells is like a factory for estrogen and makes, you know, can make more estrogen for your body.
Mm-hmm.
So this, you know, we get into a perimenopausal, you know, estrogen storm. And that's why a lot of women, you know, get uterine cancer, heavy bleeding, breast abnormalities, abnormal mammograms, and even breast cancer at or near that age. So what can you do? Well, number one, there's another aspect to this, which is that we are bathed in estrogens in our environment. Mm-hmm. There are what are called xenoestrogens, which are outside estrogens that enter our bodies. And they can cause reproductive abnormalities in animals. In you know, we see hermaphroditic animals with ambiguous genitals in areas where there are a lot of chemicals in the water. And this is affecting us, and it may increase women's risk for breast cancer, and it may increase men's risk for prostate cancer because of these excess xenoestrogens from, like,
We like to call plastics. These xenoestrogens in the environment, we like to call them gender benders.
Yes, very good. And they're, most plastics have that aspect to some degree or another. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, pesticides and chemicals that we find on...
Phthalates, BPA, bisphenol A, a lot of all of these are endocrine disruptors to some degree.
So this is creating a lot of problems. So anyway, so what can we do? Well, we can eat an organic diet. We can improve elimination because constipation increases estrogen. We can get rid of alcohol. We can give people probiotics because probiotics actually help to break down estrogen. We can improve liver function, support the liver, because the liver is the detoxifying organ. We can have people clean up their diets and eat less because that burdens their liver too much. We can have folks lose weight. We can have folks exercise because exercise itself somewhat attenuates high levels of estrogen. Mm-hmm. And we can use what are some of the supplements? Because she wants to know about supplements.
We like Prevail. The flax lignans are helpful in detoxifying that estrogen. We like calcium D-glucarate. It's that particular form of calcium that's particularly good for estrogen dominance. We like those.
DIM,
we like DIM.
Which is dimethyl methane from cabbage family vegetables. Mm-hmm.
That could even help with hormone imbalance, weight gain related to these hormonal imbalances. So
The other aspect to it, and this is a little bit of a backdoor way of dealing with it, is if your thyroid is too low. Generally, that influences your estrogen. You may have excess estrogen. So by giving a little more thyroid, that can actually change your hormonal balance. And then, of course, we can give some progesterone. It's either available over the counter. The product we use is, what is it called? It's progesterone cream.
It's a progesterone cream, yeah.
Right. And we can use oral progesterone for some women who need a lot more. It has very relaxing effects. It really curbs the... irritability that occurs at menopause, and it also helps you to sleep and relax.
Yeah, it's very sedating. It helps you to chill out. Mm-hmm. Sometimes anxiety increases with women approaching menopause or in menopause or even perimenopause. It could help to chill you out.
Mm-hmm.
The addition of progesterone.
Yeah,
and progesterone is also an antioxidant. We make it to some very small degree, even after menopause, the ovaries will still secrete tiny amounts of estrogen, a little bit from the adrenals, I think a tiny bit from the brain, but it's not being awash in progesterone anymore as you are premenopausally.
Right.
So, yeah.
So those are some of the strategies, and let's see.
Yeah. And Kathy, yeah. You might want to switch from red wine to white wine.
Yeah.
It may give you, it may help to extinguish the migraine. I don't know.
Yeah, we have a migraine diet. One of the first things we tell people to eliminate is, aged meats, red wine. It's a standard migraine diet.
Yeah, aged meats, red wine, cheese, mm-hmm. chocolate. These tyramine containers.
You don't want to have a lot of salami and prosciutto and things like that.
Right.
It may not be so good.
All the things you would have at a wine and cheese party you have to eliminate.
That's
unfortunately.
Right. Some nice, like really sharp cheddar and some red wine. That's just a disaster. That's really going to be a major migraine trigger.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But you don't have, the good news is you don't have to go on the Dean Ornish diet to feel better.
Anything's better than that, I would think. Yeah.
Well, for some of us. Some people, different strokes for different folks. Some people dig it.
That's true.
And, I must confess, I myself was on a macrobiotic vegan diet for many, many years. That was the type of diet that I was on when I began my practice in the 1980s. And then I sort of evolved and discovered that a more balanced, omnivorous diet could be beneficial.
Okay,
so what else?
So best of luck to Kathy.
Yep.
I would get some calcium D-glucarate. I would get some Prevail.
Right.
Yes.
And the dim is also good.
And dim, yes.
By the way, I'm sprinkling flaxseed on, I usually have oatmeal, usually a little bit of some kind of protein in the morning. But in the winter, oatmeal's nice. I don't have tons of it, but I have a little, few scoops of oatmeal with, I found some toasted flaxseed in a vacuum-sealed pack. And I also take the precaution of I keep it in the freezer because flaxseed can go bad very quickly.
And for those of our listeners, they should at least keep it in the refrigerator and, pay attention to that expiration date.
It has flax lignans, which are beneficial for the heart, but also specifically, I'm thinking of my prostate because they're really protective of the prostate, and in women, protective of the breasts.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Our next question comes from Marianne. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm wondering, is the whooping cough vaccine safe for adults? Particularly, is it safe for somebody with asthma? Thanks for a great show.
Well, okay, so there is a little bit of a concern about whooping cough making a comeback.
Yeah.
And what they're discovering is that some of these vaccines that were supposed to be, players like one and done, have... there's a point at which they lose efficacy. And with the resurgence of whooping cough in certain parts of the world, partially because people want to remain unvaccinated, I mean, the pro-vaccine advocates blame the refuseniks for this. They say, look, if everybody took the vaccine, these diseases would disappear. But nonetheless, they've flared in certain parts of the world, particularly England. So they're now advocating repeat DPT, that's whooping cough is also called pertussis, so it's the P in DPT, diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus, that people get boosters, and older people get boosters, and you'll be encouraged to get that if you go to the doctor sometimes. I don't believe necessarily that these will worsen asthma, but there's a chance. It's a risk-benefit equation when you take a vaccine. You may or may not get protection from the disease. We know this from the flu vaccine, where people are they're only getting partial protection from the flu. It's only about 40% effective this year, if that. And if they're saying 40%, it probably means it's about 15%, if that's the official word from the CDC. And then there are some people who have rarely terrible reactions. Other people have mild, unpleasant reactions. People who have autoimmune diseases, I'm a little cautious about vaccines because I know that they can sometimes stir up the immune system.
Yeah.
So a little bit of concern perhaps in someone who has MS, where a triggering of their autoimmunity might be disastrous.
Yeah.
But asthma, I'm not sure. In fact, one could make an argument that an asthmatic is at especially high risk if they were to develop pertussis, because an ordinary person might weather a case of whooping cough, but an asthmatic might come to grievous circumstances with that virus. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Marianne, best of luck. All right. Our next question is from Paul. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I suffer from a dry discharge from my nose. It's quite crusty within my nostrils, and in the past I've been given antibiotics called Bactroban cream.
Yeah. So just to cut that off, what that often means is sometimes means you have a staph infection in your nose. It's a crusty discharge, and sometimes the nose will be painful. It means that there's an infection inside the nose, chronic infection. So Bactroban is a type of prescription cream that is effective against staph.
Well, his doctor is telling him to apply it 3 times daily. It works, although only temporarily, and it does return every couple of months. The doctor is happy to prescribe this for me, but I was hoping that you could assist with some natural alternatives.
Sure, yeah. Well, what I would suggest, first of all, at the time that it's acute, there may not be anything more effective than that. Although there's some good studies that show that oil of oregano, is really good against staph. So you might apply locally in the nose oil of oregano. Other things that are helpful.
A natural antibiotic.
It's a very nice natural antibiotic. And you won't develop antibiotic resistance to it because it's a plant substance. It's hard for bacteria to develop resistance to these botanicals. So that's why they may be actually superior to antibiotics. Silver solutions could be helpful. We have a nice
Argentin
in this case, maybe a gel, because the spray might be good for the back of the throat if you have a sore throat. But this is, you know, a gel, so she could just, you know, stick her finger in her nose or Q-tip in her nose. We don't want people to stick their sharp fingernails in their nose, but a Q-tip with the gel in the nose might be very effective, because silver is a nice natural antibiotic. And the other thing that I got to say that I have noticed that with the dry air, this is January in New York for those listening to the podcast, in other parts of the country or at other times of the year, it's very dry in my apartment. And I noticed that, I wake in the mornings, I blow my nose, and I noticed it was a little blood tinged. Because my nasal passages were very dry. And so I applied some Manuka oil in my nose.
Oh.
And within a day, it was all resolved. Manuka oil cream.
Wonderful.
It's actually one of our featured products at drhoffman.com. You'll see it on our website. It's great for dry skin. And it can be applied inside the nose. And it has natural antibiotic and soothing properties, too. So that I find... that really worked well for me. I don't think I have staph in my nose, but, you know, it did sort of have some dry, crusty material. And
sometimes it's just from, the winter, the dry weather, people in apartments with radiators.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes a humidifier. Do you think a humidifier would be helpful? I mean, obviously not for a staph infection.
I have to say, I am not keen on humidifiers for the reason that they're actually very hard to clean.
Oh.
And two things, you know, they can...
why I threw mine out. Threw mine out because I got tired of cleaning it.
Because they will develop biofilms in them. You have to clean them very frequently, because otherwise you're dispersing bacteria and mold into the air. And the other thing is, you know, if you just put tap water in there, what you're doing is you're chlorinating your air. So,
that's
would suggest...
That's not great either.
I mean, that's... You're doing that every time you turn on the shower in your house, but you can also put a shower filter on. But I would go with a, some sort of, water purifier to take the chlorine out, or use distilled water for that, so that you don't put stuff in the air.
All right. Best of luck to Paul. Try the Manuka. I think that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah. Wow. We have time for one more.
Great. Let's see here. This one comes from Carol. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I have three brief questions related to sugar. One, I keep hearing about the evils of too much sugar, but no one mentions how much is too much. Could you please tackle that? Number two, the other question is related.
I love that question, because it's sort of like the concept of sin in religion. It's like, how much can we do? You know,
how much can we do?
Yep.
The other question is related. Would sugar alcohols be grouped into this category, or can we run amok with sugar alcohol? And three, would cancer also feed off of sugar alcohols? Carol, first of all, you need to subscribe to our newsletter, and you need to go to drhoffman.com and read our articles. I've got at least three articles there about the evils of sugar and the various reasons. And a good look at, you know, the sugar substitutes, as well as Dr. Hoffman has a great article on sugar substitutes as well. So I think that's a good place to start. But let's talk about it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, too much sugar, yes, there is a such thing as too much sugar. Sugar needs to be classified as a drug. It is actually already an anti-nutrient. It wipes out our B vitamins. It wipes out magnesium. It feeds bad bacteria in the gut, in our skin, everywhere. It's just simply not good for us at all.
I think she's sold on that concept already. I think the question is, our strategy for dealing with alcoholism, is the correct, and there's controversy, like there's AA, which says, you know, do 12-step program, total abstinence for life, you know, take it one day at a time. And then there's what's called harm reduction, which is the idea that we're going to train people to have just a little bit, you know, and not harm themselves and develop new habits. So when it comes to sugar, I think it's a little bit like that, because there's some people, they can't go near that, just like alcoholics. They have
That's
to,
true.
It's got to be zero tolerance. There are other people...
It's like flipping a switch.
Right. There are other people.
You know, a half a cookie or a bite of carrot cake is not going to be enough.
Right.
They want the rest of it. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's like many things that may not be good for you in excess. You know, like alcohol. Cigarettes are an example where you really should have zero tolerance. But alcohol, you know, mm-hmm. a little bit. You know, studies show that there may be mild health benefits to some alcohol. Contrary, I got a caller who was very irate on my program the other day because I argued with him because he said alcohol is a poison. How can you advocate? I said, well, if it's a poison, how come it's been so highly touted throughout since the dawn of civilization? And, our efforts to prohibit it have been, resoundingly unsuccessful. But anyway, so with sugar, it also depends on the circumstance. There are some people where we really, really, really want them to cut down sugar because they've got prediabetes, they've got overweight, they've got some serious problems where so sugar, they just don't want to go near that. There are other people, and I will count myself among that. You know, I pay it forward with a lot of exercise, and I eat well ordinarily, so I reward myself with some dark chocolate that frankly has some sugar in it. If you ever tasted 99% dark chocolate, it's pretty grody. It's like eating, mud. So, there's going to be some sugar in that.
Right.
You can get artificially sweetened chocolate, but it just doesn't taste as good.
Right.
So I will do some, and I unfortunately, I got to leave it kind of ambiguous. I mean, some people may want me to say never, no way, no how, but I think whenever you do that, you engender a kind of sometimes a negative response. People rebel and, never turns into an obsession.
That's true, because, nobody, and I use this example a lot, and people have heard me say it, nobody was interested in the cookie jar that sat on the kitchen counter for 25 years until somebody took it away and said no more.
Yeah.
Now suddenly we're obsessed.
Yeah.
But for 25 years, it's like, oh, cookie, yeah, I don't know. But now somebody said no, and now we're obsessed with the cookies.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, same psychology.
So let's go to the sugar alcohol thing. What are those, by the way?
Sugar alcohols are basically, they're naturally occurring in many of our fruits in very, very small degrees, but sugar alcohols are those ending with the letters OL. Xylitol, which we like, sorbitol, maltitol, erythritol, there are many sugar alcohols. They are not recognized as carbohydrates in the body, so it's a little better. It's certainly better than having regular sugar or table sugar. And xylitol.
And that was actually a big component of many of the Atkins desserts. They used a lot of those types of things.
Bars.
Right.
And the bars. A lot of low-carb bars or low-sugar bars or no-sugar bars will feature a sugar alcohol.
And sugarless gum,
yes. The warning with that is some people go overboard, and if you take in, there's an upper tolerable limit for sugar alcohols. People will tend to get diarrhea if they overdo the sugar alcohols. Remember, I said the body doesn't recognize it as a carbohydrate, so it floats on through literally if you introduce enough of it into your gut.
Yep.
So something to watch out for. But we like xylitol.
What about whether they're healthy or unhealthy for you?
I wouldn't, either way, again, you could overdo sugar alcohol and have a laxative effect. That is not a healthy thing. But having some xylitol, say some of the spry gum or something, of that nature from time to time should be okay.
Right. One theoretical concern, and it's not always the case, but at least a theoretical concern, is that by piquing people's appetites for sweets and making them remaining psychologically dependent on that sweet reward, it sometimes kindles desire for sweet foods, which then, at a less opportune moment, might translate into eating, the real thing, the sugar.
Exactly. So people have to be aware of that,
Yeah.
Sometimes eating the fake sugars for people who are sugar addicts is the same as having alcohol-free wine or alcohol-free beer for an alcoholic. It doesn't help. It perpetuates the craving, however.
Right.
So things to consider, yeah.
It's a matter of strategy.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you for your question, Carol. And do visit our website so you can read more about, the dangers, the caveats of sugar, sugar substitutes, sugar alcohols.
And subscribe to our newsletter, please.
Yes.
And I might
add, you could do that also at drhoffman.com. You could sign up right there.
And I might add, follow us on Twitter and Facebook, because we're into social media.
Well, one of us is. It's not me.
You're a refusenik when it comes to that. Okay.
Oh, so far.
Okay. You just don't want to clutter your life. All right. Thanks very much for joining us. And this is our weekly Q&A with Layla. We've got lots more podcasts in store for you. And we hope that you listen to them, and you can subscribe via iTunes and get them automatically downloaded to your desktop or your mobile device. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.